And now it's time for you to get cuddled up next to your radio or your television, because here she is, Dr. Susie Block.
Hi. I love you. My name is Dr. Susan Block, your love doctor, your mother confessor, your baby girly girl, your ever so slightly twisted little sister, your daughter of the American Revelation, your horny housewife, and your friend. You know I'm always your friend. And before I get to your calls tonight, before we get into another of our always fascinating forums on human sexuality, I want to take you on a trip, a pleasure trip, into a real-life Garden of Eden, whose inhabitants were never evicted. Deep in the heart of the hot, wet swamps of Zaire, Africa, as well as smack in the center of the San Diego Zoo, there is a tribe. It is here that our kissing cousins, the bonobos, live and share a powerful kind of pleasure and make an extraordinary kind of love. Now, as those of you who know me know, I've studied bonobos, and Ben and Max and I have filmed bonobos swinging from the trees as well as with each other. And I've written about bonobos. They're the centerpiece of my new book, The Ten Commandments of Pleasure. And just in case you don't know a bonobo from a bonsai bush, bonobos, also called pygmy chimpanzees, pan paniscus if you speak Latin, bonobos are the horniest chimps on Earth and the gentlest chimps on Earth. Some scientists say that they're actually closer to human than common chimps, though that's debatable. They sure look a lot more like us, and most important, well, one of the most important aspects of their similarity to us is that the genitals of the bonobo female are rotated forward like those of the human female so that they can have face-to-face sex rather than just, doggy style like most other primates. Basically, darling, bonobos can do it in as many positions as we can. And they do it. A lot. Females are in heat for three-quarters of their cycle, and many copulate even when not in heat. Though common chimps only have reproductive sex, bonobos share all kinds of sexual pleasures. Oral sex, masturbation, massage, hand jobs, group sex, lots of bisexuality, and lots of long, deep, soulful French kissing. Like tantric sex practitioners, or just like two people very much in love. Copulating bonobos often look deeply into each other's eyes. So intimate, isn't it? But it's not just how bonobos have sex. It's how they use sex that makes them so interesting. They use sex to ease stress, to maintain relationships, as a form of commercial exchange, as in, I'll give you a kiss if you give me a banana, and to reduce violence. Violence between males, violence between males and females, and violence between tribes of bonobos. Scientific observation has shown that bonobos are far less violent than common chimps. They really do make love, not war. That's not to say that bonobos never fight. They just do it a lot less viciously. And unlike common chimps and humans, bonobos have never been observed deliberately killing members of their own species. Also unlike common chimps and humans, they're not male dominated. Females rule bonobo society. Kind of like here at the Dr. Susan Block Institute. Sex and mutual pleasure are keys to keeping the peace, basing social relations upon the give and take of pleasure rather than on pain and force and fear. The bonobo way, that's what I call it, is a very simple philosophy. After all, these aren't geniuses, darling. They are chimpanzees. That is, pleasure eases pain, good sex diffuses tension, love lessens violence, and you can't very well fight a war while you're having an orgasm. Oh, and one more precept. Females rule, especially when it comes to sex. The commandments in my Ten Commandments of Pleasure are my way of applying the principles of the bonobo way to the far more complex, civilized lives of human ladies and gentlemen. They support the repression of violence and the free, exuberant, erotic, loving, peaceful, consensual expression of pleasure. And if you want to call me and talk to me about all this, or some of this, about the subject of sex and violence in our society, about primate patterns, about life, love, and bonobos, and or just about your personal sexual pleasures, or problems, or your problems with your pleasures.
My number is 1-866-289-7068.
Hey, give me a kiss, and I'll suck your banana. Just kidding. Welcome back to the Dr. Susan Block Show, where we try to practice the bonobo way of peace through pleasure. Y'all know I'm a big bonobo buff, right? I even call my staff the Bonobo Gang. And we made a bonobo film, and I wrote about bonobos in my book, The Ten Commandments of Pleasure. So I am very excited about my guest tonight because he is an expert in primatology in general, and bonobos in particular. He is Dr. Richard Wrangham, a MacArthur Foundation Fellow, Professor of Anthropology at Harvard, and along with Dale Peterson, he has written a fascinating new book called Demonic Males, Apes and the Origins of Human Violence. In it, he uses his studies of chimpanzees and gorillas and orangutans and my beloved bonobos to explore the reasons why humans, especially male humans, are so violent and also what we can do about it. There are a few things we might be able to do about it. Unlike little Miss Armchair Bonobo Buff me, Dr. Richard Wrangham didn't just watch bonobos at the zoo. He actually went to Zaire, and he went to Borneo to see orangutans, Africa to see gorillas and chimpanzees, and bonobos in Zaire, not to mention, of course, humans at Harvard, or maybe we consider those near humans. anyway, I won't get too partisan about Harvard and Yale here tonight. And it's all in this great new book and a lot more called Demonic Males. So, Dr. Richard Wrangham, welcome to the Dr. Susan Block Show.
Well, thank you. Nice to be here.
I loved your book. I read it obsessively. I finished it in a day and a half. I couldn't put it down. It reads like a mystery.
Well, that's great to hear from anyone. It's particularly great to hear from a bonobo buff.
I am a bonobo buff. And before we get into my beloved bonobos, let's talk about us. Us humans. Why are humans, especially male humans, so violent?
Well, why is a funny question, you know, but it does seem as though we have a history of 5 or 6 million years of being violent, and it's really taking advantage of opportunities. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty hideous concept, but natural selection has imbued the human mind with the desire to take advantage of every opportunity to raise status, to control others.
And how do you think our sexuality figures into this?
Well, for humans, we obviously don't do what bonobos do, which is to resolve aggressive tensions in a gentle way through sex. The important thing about sex for humans is that men use aggression to get sex. And humans are not an attractive species by comparison with bonobos. Of course, you know, this book is about the nasty things that happen, and it's about violence. You know, when you read and write about violence, you're focusing in on one sort of unpleasant aspect. Let's face it, you know, for most of the time, humans are nice.
Yes,
we are. I don't
want
to suggest that we think that everybody behaves like this all the time. The big question is, why should people be violent sometimes?
Well, yes, and how can we get more like bonobos? So let's talk a little bit, before we talk about bonobos, about how we're close to our other great ape cousins, the chimps, the gorillas, the orangutans. Modern genetics puts us humans pretty close to them, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, there we are, chimps and gorillas are both big, black, hairy things that look just like each other, and yet we are more closely related to chimps than chimps are to gorillas.
Amazing.
And so it really means that we look at the evidence and we have evolved from something that looked very much like a chimpanzee.
So can you talk a little bit about the different great apes and how their sex practices differ and also their violence, how it differs?
Well, I mean, the sex is incredibly different.
Yeah.
So if you take chimpanzees, I mean, here's one way to think about it. How many acts of intercourse, how many copulations make a baby, right? If you're a gorilla, it'll take about 20 copulations to make a baby.
Okay.
If you're a chimpanzee, probably 300, 400, 500, 600.
Hmm.
And if you're a bonobo, probably even higher, maybe 700 or 800.
Wow.
And for humans?
And for humans.
Hey, you take it yourself.
Okay, I will.
Yeah,
I'll take a thousand.
Several hundred, right? Yeah. And one of the shocking things about the apes, and this is what, you know, shows us that we have such a strange, long past of violence, is that in our close relatives, we do see patterns like ourselves. So in chimpanzees, we see something rather akin to domestic violence, with males battering females.
Mm-hmm.
In orangutans, we see males regularly raping females. In gorillas, on the whole, it's a much quieter life, but males who want to try and grab a female from a neighboring group will kill her baby.
Baby killing, yeah.
Right.
So they all have different ways of interweaving violence with their sex practices.
Well, you can say that. That's right.
So let's talk about bonobos. I discovered bonobos actually on PBS a few years ago, and I thought, gee, what a pornographic movie I'm seeing on PBS. And I instantly fell in love. Actually, I fell in lust with bonobos for their sexiness, and then I fell in love with them for their peacefulness. And they really became my inspiration. And let's see, I read Franz de Waal's books and saw them at the zoo. Haven't been to Zaire yet. Maybe next Christmas vacation, you know. But you have been there, and your book has really enhanced my bonobo education, especially regarding female power, sexual and otherwise, and how it keeps the peace. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it just seems to be increasingly clear that in bonobo land, the females have reversed the situation. They're not totally dominant over all males, but they sort of share status with them, and it does look as though regularly, when there's intense competition for something delicious like meat, the females are the ones who manage to get it.
Which isn't true in any of the other great apes.
Exactly right. Exactly right. The others are all very much male-dominated, really totally male-dominated. And bonobos look as though they have reversed it because they've evolved from a male-dominated society. And the wonderful thing about this is that it looks as though a really important component of it is just that the females have won back their status as a result of their own action. So what they have done is to develop these strong, trusting relationships with each other so that if a male does lose his temper and starts beating up on a female, which is a pretty stupid thing to do in bonobo land,
right,
then what happens is she will give a shriek And the neighboring females, the ones just a few yards away, all come rushing to her aid, and they'll all chase him together.
Bonobo sisterhood. All right.
Exactly. But the amazing thing is it's not even formally sisters.
Right. No. It's just a sort of solidarity.
It's solidarity because these are young women, as it were, who have grown up in different groups, and they've all come together in this one group. They've moved in when they're adolescents, so about the age of maybe 10, 12, 13, that sort of thing. And at first they don't know each other, and at first they're just strangers. And here's where they use the sex.
Now, explain for me and everybody else, Hoka Hoka.
Well, Hoka Hoka is the name that the African people there give to the hot lesbian sex that these females have.
It is clinically called genital rubbing.
Exactly.
Which is just, they have very large genitals, very large clitorises, and they rub them together, and this is for pleasure and for achieving this solidarity.
Yeah. When the new female comes into the group, then what she does, she looks like she falls in love with one particular female. She sits next to her, and if the other one looks towards her, then her eyes look away. She follows her around in a sort of relatively subtle way.
Courtship.
And eventually she will start having little interactions with her. And one of the really important interactions is that they have sex together.
Mm.
And they look really interested in having sex, much more so, actually, than when they have sex with the males. And when they have sex with the males, they certainly sort of seem pretty happy about it. But they kind of look a little bit bored. But when the two females get together, you know, they are really excited. They're quick in their movements. They look into each other's eyes. They're kind of passionate, and it really looks like they have an orgasm because they clutch each other and they sort of come to a sudden halt. They probably do sometimes with the males, but it looks much more often with the females.
And do the males like to watch, like human males love to watch two women again?
No, not at all.
Oh, well. No bonobo voyeurism?
No sex voyeurism has been noticed, and no ape voyeurism.
But they have a lot of different kinds of sex. I mean, they have masturbation and bisexuality, as we've just said. I mean, the males do even play with each other a little bit.
Yeah, that's right.
And they have lots of oral sex and group sex, I guess. And how do you think the quality and sheer quantity of bonobo sex reduces violence in their community? How does that work together?
Well, I mean, what is very striking is that if there is a little bit of social tension, if one bonobo gets greedy and pinches another's food while the other one isn't looking or just is occupied or something, then very quickly they may resolve that little their feelings by coming together and coupling in whatever combination they are. I mean, it could be an adult male, an adult female. It could be two females, it could be two males, but it could be young ones involved as well.
Right.
And even the young females are very happy to play with the genitals of a male. They won't have penetration, of course, but they will rub each other in a sort of rather fond way.
To ease stress and tension and kind of communicate feelings.
Yeah, and the important thing about bonobos from this perspective seems to be that they have got sufficiently relaxed relationships that they can use sex in a trusting way. Because chimps have the capacity to do this, and occasionally you will see it in chimpanzees. But in general, chimpanzees have sufficiently tense relationships that it looks as though they just don't dare use sex.
Right.
Sex is something that is only something that you can use to mend a relationship if you basically have a lot of trust in the relationship.
Mm-hmm. One thing, at the zoo, we saw the bonobos using sex toys. I mean, what they were doing was they were masturbating with plastic balls, these big plastic beach balls.
This was females or males?
Females.
Uh-huh.
And now, do they do anything like this in the wild? I mean, they don't have the big plastic beach balls, so do they use those big fruits or bananas, or do they use other things than each other?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I've only spent a few weeks with them in the wild, but it hasn't been observed. And actually, no, it's a funny thing that in the wild, chimps and bonobos seem to be quite uninterested in masturbation.
Huh, so they do that in captivity. Maybe they're more bored?
Captivity, they may just have a little bit, you know, more time on their hands.
So they use their hands.
right.
Well, I guess when human beings are in captivity, they masturbate more, too.
Well, there you go. Just interestingly enough, it's a sort of slightly unsolved mystery, because there are monkeys that masturbate quite regularly in the wild, even though they apparently would have as many sexual opportunities. So, you know, I think it's rather puzzling.
Well, it is, but we're learning more and more about all these wonderful creatures. Now, in terms of evolution, you have a very interesting theory, and it should take a long time, but maybe you can explain it in a nutshell, as to why bonobos are so much more sexual and so much less violent than common chimps regarding their climate, or the evolution of the climate.
Well, the theory that we put forward in the book is really the only one that's been advanced so far, and it is that the difference between chimps and bonobos all stems from a difference in food supply, which arose about 2.5 million years ago when the climate dried up in the area that bonobos now occupy. And it all goes back to the fact that bonobos were given by this climatic change access to a food source that allows them to travel in relatively large and stable groups. And the fact that they can do so means that females can live with each other for long enough to develop firm, stable, trusting relationships. And once they can do that, then they can control the males. And the fascinating thing is that this is what you see in captivity with chimpanzees doing the same thing. The females learn to control the males if they can spend enough time together. The problem with the wild chimpanzees is that they don't have the food that enable them to do that. And then we see other changes as well, in which a chimpanzee-like ancestor seems to have become more bonobo-like. And in every case, we see the same pattern in a slight way in chimps. Here's one example. It really looks as though bonobos have concealed their ovulation. So the males
like humans
can't tell when the females are fertile. Well, this is a fantastic thing from the female's point of view, because it means that the males are not fighting to get at her when she is fertile.
Right.
Because that's what they do in the species where they are.
And then they hurt her, you know. So all these males.
They hurt her. They
gang bang.
Her, they fight over her, and she gets involved in the fights. And it's an incredibly stressful time for a female chimpanzee. Because the males do know that she's fertile.
Right. But they gangbang her.
Male chimps, they also conceal their ovulation. And you get a pattern which is much more bonobo-like.
And it's a pattern that is kind of like a human swing party. I want to ask you a question. Do you realize how much human swingers function or try to function without knowing it like bonobos?
Well, tell me. No, I don't.
Well, first of all, they have lots of sex, of course, and they don't swing from the trees, but they do swing with each other. And they swap partners. They have threesomes and moresomes, you know, and they tend to do it in large groups, swing parties, and women rule. You know, rules are such that there are never more men than women at a swing party. There's always more women than men. Guys like this because it means more women.
Yes.
You know, but also women have more power, and there is power in numbers, just like with bonobos.
And do they get their power in numbers? Do they sort of, you know, if a man gets out of hand, then do the women
kick,
call on the
they
men?
Kick him out. They kick him out.
They'll call out as the women.
The women will kick him out, and the men respect this, so the other men will help with if it needs to be, if the guy really gets out of hand and you need some you know, upper body strength or something. The men really respect the women's power, because otherwise they won't get laid.
It sounds wonderfully bonobo-like. It reminds me of a group of people in France who about 15 years ago started to live a life like chimpanzees. And what they did was to eat the kinds of foods that chimpanzees eat, you know, the amount of fruits and the amount of leaves that chimps eat. But now they're living in the bonobo way, having a sort of sex lives like bonobos in a chateau in France.
That sounds like they're kind of like swingers, you know. I mean, and the women solidify their relationships through having sex with each other, you know. And compared to the, you know, the bar scene or just about any party scene, most swing parties are very, very peaceful. And the only way I think that swingers differ from bonobos is that they don't involve their whole families in the sex. They leave the kids out of it.
Yes, right, right. I mean, that's a real hard one when it comes to humans.
Yeah. Well, they do practice or are trying to practice the bonobo way, and they don't even know it. And actually, I gave a little seminar on bonobos to a group of swingers at the Lifestyles Convention a few months ago, and they really just went wild seeing the films and hearing about them and understanding that that their practices are not necessarily just about getting their yayas off, but also about keeping the peace.
Well, that's fantastic. Have you written about this in your book?
Yeah, I have. You
got
to get a copy. I'm going to send you a copy because you've been so great.
That'd be wonderful.
Now, let me ask you, the bonobos are an endangered species?
Yes. In fact, we don't even know how many there are in the wild, but it was devastating to go 2 years ago to visit Takayoshi Kano's site at Wamba, where he's been studying for 17 years, and they're lucky to be there because they are happen to be a taboo species that the local tribe just has decided that they shouldn't eat them.
Mm.
And yet, people are suffering so much from difficulty of getting money and good food that they are even now starting to turn to eat them.
Ugh.
And so it's just a few thousand left in the wild.
Well, hopefully now with, you know, people like us as bonobo ambassadors, we humans will start helping them instead of destroying them.
Yes, there are lots of people who are trying, and let's hope that the peace can come to Zaire. You probably know there's tremendous difficulties in Zaire at the moment.
That makes it tough. It's funny, I mean, we have Save the Whales, Save the Spotted Owls. These creatures are so close to us, we have to save them.
It's amazing, and we only discovered about them so recently. I mean, the first scientist ever to see a bonobo in the wild was in 1973. We didn't even know of the existence of bonobos until the 1930s. And yet, this extraordinary species gives us sort of so much insight and hope about ourselves.
Well, you give us so much insight about bonobos and about ourselves, Dr. Wrangham, and I want to ask you to hold on because I have a caller that wants to talk with you. He's actually someone that we know, Dr. Jim, and we'll be right back Dr. Richard Wrangham and Dr. Jim and me, Dr. Susie Block, your love doctor. Practice the bonobo way and give us a call.
1-866-289-7068.
To talk about your sexuality and bonobo love. Welcome back to the Dr. Susan Block Show, where we make love, not war, like the bonobos do. And we are pacifist, sensualist, ethical hedonist. And if you'd like to talk to me about your sexuality, your sensuality, or your views on the bonobo way,
my number is 1-866-289-7068.
And just in case you've just tuned in, as those of you who know me know, the bonobos are the inspiration and the centerpiece of my new book, The Ten Commandments of Pleasure. And I have on the line with me the author of a fabulous new book, another book, so you got to get two books when you go to the bookstore now, The Ten Commandments of Pleasure by Dr. Susan Block and Demonic Males by Richard Wrangham and Dale Peterson. And Dr. Wrangham is on the phone with me right now, calling from Harvard, and we were talking about the bonobo way and about our relationship to our kissing cousins. Dr. Wrangham, are you there? Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Oh, okay. And I've got Dr. Jim, who also said hello. Dr. Jim is also on the line, and he is a regular caller and visitor and he's a member of the bonobo gang here at the Dr. Susan Block Institute. You definitely are, Dr. Jim.
Great.
And have you been listening to our discussion?
Oh, yeah. Very interesting. It's fascinating. I might add that I think that you're actually militantly pacifist. It's just amazing.
I'll spank you if you aren't peaceful.
Yeah. And I had a question for Dr. Wrangham.
Go ahead.
The natural selective process in all of the other ape species kind of relies on the strongest male to have his harem and to collect females and reproduce that way. And I was wondering, in the bonobos, what is the selective process? In other words, what type of male, is there some feel for what type of male gets to have more sex with the females to select out the species? I'm not sure if I'm really phrasing my question correctly.
No, I'm with you.
Excuse me?
Okay, go ahead.
I'm with you, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, it seems that the kind of things that would be selective would be a peace-loving male and one that maybe is more attractive or physically more appealing to the females, while not being the strongest and, you know, the biggest monkey on the block. I'm wondering if you have any feel for that, about do some males have more sex than others?
Do females ostracize the male jerks, the ones that might stupidly push their weight around?
Yeah, but you know, of course it's difficult to know who's actually having the babies, because we don't know when the females are fertile any more than the males do. You know, it's just difficult to tell without actually some kind of monitoring of hormone levels.
I think what Dr. Jim is asking, though, is would the females, whether they're fertile or not, have more sex with the more peaceful males than with the males that are more, I don't know, rambunctious? I know they don't kill each other, but some of the males are a little out of hand.
It looks though it pretty much evens out.
Uh-huh. You
know, all of the males have a fairly good shot. In fact, basically, whenever a male wants to have sex, he can. Yeah, there's very little refusal.
I know of a lot of guys who want to go jump through the jungle in Zaire right now.
I'm going over there. I'm Dr. Block's primate, so
I want to go to the Chateau in France myself.
Yeah, that right. Sounded good.
No, I mean, as long as they behave all right, you know, they can have sex. But the interesting thing is the sort of deeper side of Jim's question, which mm-hmm. is, what has natural selection done to affect the type of male that wins out?
Right.
And, you know, what you have in bonobos is a sort of juvenilization compared to chimps. But you have a lot of juvenile chimp features retained into adulthood, and what
they're cuter. Is that what you mean, that they're cuter looking?
Yes, exactly. The females are choosing the cute males.
Uh-huh. And perhaps more playful.
And of course it reflects the fact that they are the less violent ones. They're the ones who have not matured into a high testosterone poisoning situation.
Now, I have I'm Max Doctors.
That's my butler.
I'm the butler here. I'm the number one primate.
My prime mate. He's my primary mate.
I don't know whether I should grow hair or lose it to look sexier. You know what I'm saying? But I have a rather volatile question here. Dr. Jim is actually a pediatrician. And they tend to have sex with their young, don't they, also? I heard about that on public broadcasting.
Yes, the young are not averse.
I see.
Uh-huh. Starting at 1 year old, I think.
Yeah, well, with the males, yeah.
So your question, Max?
Well, my question really is...
Max is baiting me.
No. No, I'm not baiting you, doctor. It's just an interesting subject because we've gotten to the point in society where any kind of... child sexuality is really looked upon as horrible. And yet art and literature and genetically and socially, there are children. And so there's some very difficult issues raised. And I don't know myself, but I think, is there some possibility that the training of young bonobos helps to bring the process along with the food and those kinds of things? And I know it's a really tough question, but...
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not about to say anything which advocates sort of pedophilic...
No, no, I understand that. No, but it's...
But it's absolutely right that, I mean, these young males, at the age of about 12 or 18 months, which is equivalent to about a two-year-old human, something like that, they are having sex in which the adult females are quite happy to have this with them, and indeed their mothers will allow it.
Mm-hmm. And the mothers are very powerful.
They're powerful, and they're giving.
Mm-hmm.
And they're training their little boys in a quite a cheerful way.
And how about the little girls? Kiki had a question about the females. Where's Kiki? Come over to the microphone, Kiki. You had a question about females and how they first sort of lose their virginity or something?
Yes. I was just wondering if the young female chimps know when it's time to lose their virginity, or are they just taken by a group of men, or how does that work?
Oh, they're quite in control themselves. It's kind of very obvious what's happening because they have a sexual swelling, and the sexual swelling is actually their labia, which become very large, and they're a little bit scared, but on the other hand, they're very fascinated by males at that age.
And, do they go chasing?
What they're doing when they have their first sexual swellings is they get very interested in approaching their youngest males.
Mm.
And when they first start getting really interested in the big males, they're very ambivalent. You know, they want to go towards them, and yet they're absolutely terrified of what's going to happen. But it is them that do it, because actually, here's one very big difference between chimps and bonobos and humans.
Right.
In humans, men like girls. They might like young women.
Mm-hmm.
And in chimps and bonobos, the males are not very interested in the young. They're much more interested in older women.
That
They're
is interesting.
They're much more interested in women who are really middle-aged.
Hey, 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 let's hear it for the middle-aged female.
humans are very unusual in the fascination of men with having sex with young women.
So
well,
that...
Can I...
Yeah, go ahead, Dr.
Jim. Several things. I think that that's a very good point, and I think that it points to pedophilia, especially with the older male to a younger female, as being probably a psychologically aberrant and pathologic.
And a power game.
Yeah. And well, it's a lot easier to seduce kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have to, you can make a kid smile if you just happen to be a nice person and you talk to them right. And they're very trusting and they're innocent. And whereas to get an adult woman into bed, you have to try and make some kind of relationship, or you have to have $100 or whatever. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. you have to have something going for you.
Right.
Whereas children are much easier to prey upon, and so I think it's really aberrant. And the other point I wanted to make is that with Max, what he was referring to about initiating the young. That I think that is actually not uncommon in other cultures among humans.
Yeah.
In that, like in some Asian cultures.
Polynesian islands.
Yeah. And they don't have sex with the kids, but they let the kids watch. And
the kids
to
have sex with each other.
And the kids are encouraged to have sex with each other at an
early-ish
age. Yeah.
But until you hit puberty, the hormonal stimulation is not there to have a real... strong sexual drive.
Almost the way humans are pedophiles, a lot of them, it seems like they're more like gorillas. They sort of prey on the young.
Yeah, oh yeah. And that's for me what motivates me so strongly to prosecute sexual abuse, and you know, because I really think it's adults preying on children.
And yet it's very important that we separate preying on children from touching children and hugging and, and affection.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And as far as the sexual education of children, that's more of a cultural thing because, you know, I mean, gee, in India, you'll have the whole family in a big room, and so the adults will have sex, you know, after the kids have started to fall asleep. And if they wake up and watch, that's okay. And in Sweden, they start sexual education in preschool, you know. And so that's more of an American phobia than it is a
Sweden sounds very bonobo-like. I think we have so much to learn from these great relatives here, wherever they're from.
Yeah. Now, speaking of which, I mean, Dr. Wrangham, are we humans getting more and more violent as a species, or do you think there's hope for us, and can we learn something from the bonobo way?
Well, I mean, I think the big trend is that with societies becoming more prosperous, and...
That's good. More fruits and vegetables and stuff
which in our case actually has a lot to do with women's economic independence.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Then that does tend to lead to a reduction in violence in society. And, you know, in the kind of interesting parallel in a way, which is that you hear women's voices more often politically.
Right.
You hear them in a totally different way from bonobos, of course. You hear them actually expressed in the vote, which, you know, the women's vote is being courted in this election. As Naomi Wolf says, you know, it's kind of weird.
Have the bonobos, in essence, answered the material question so they can be more peaceful?
Well, economic independence really helps. Question, for
and,
women.
And they do go, they do have their fruits and their foliage that they eat. They have more to eat than common chimps.
That's right. And that allows them to travel together with each other. And they're not dependent on men. And there is something funny about human evolution, which has led to a species which is very unlike most species, in which women tend to be economically dependent on men. And that leads to all sorts of trouble.
Right. Leads to women staying in violent relationships because they can't make it on their own. But
exactly.
That's happening less and less because women can make it on their own. So you better be nice to your woman if you want to keep her.
Yeah, there are good trends there. I mean, you know, we look at American society and often think how awful and violent it is, but actually, in relation to the poorer societies of the world, it's much better.
Right.
Which is kind of an awful thing to say in some ways, but,
it's a good thing to say. I mean, women do have more power here, and we do have more prosperity. And, I mean, of course, one of the problems is we have more technology, so when we are violent, it's more lethal.
We have less handgun control, too.
Yeah.
I remember reading recently that there were like 10,000 deaths from handguns in teenagers in America, and all the other Western nations combined was, you know, less than 1,000. It was just incredible big difference, just because of handgun restrictions.
Yeah, I mean, among the prosperous nations, the existence of guns is just an appalling predictor of actual death.
How many bonobos are actually left in the world? Do you know, Doctor?
Between 5,000 and 10,000 is what people estimate, but there's very little solid information.
Has this terrible thing that's been going on in Zaire, is this affecting them, do you know?
Well, not directly, but it is certainly going to, because it's just going to make it harder for anyone to get in there and help to control things.
Well, we all want to help somehow. I mean, we're trying to work here to put together a bonobo foundation.
Well, certainly we like to spread the information about them to a more mass audience than...
Well, you know, there is a Bonobo Protection Fund, and the person who is really heading that is Susan Savage Rumbo. I'm sure you know her name.
Yeah, we've heard of her.
Yeah, well, we're trying very hard with our audiences and so forth.
That's wonderful.
To get money to these foundations to protect these bonobos. They're just as important to us as our children, as our dolphins, and everything else that lives on Earth. And we can learn so much from them.
We really can. They're teaching us all the time. And, you know, there have still only been two places in the wild where they've really been studied at all carefully. And it would be lovely to get more people out, because I'm sure they'll have different cultures in different places.
Well, you're certainly helping a lot to get the word out about these wonderful cousins of ours.
Book.
And we love your book. And you who are out there, if you're interested in bonobos, or if you're just interested in humans,
please,
you really got to get this book, Demonic Males, by Dr. Richard Wrangham and Dale Peterson. And, of course, while you're in the bookstore, you should pick up a copy of The Ten Commandments of Pleasure, one to tell you why bonobos make love, not war, and the other to help you to learn to make love, not war.
I have another question.
In your own life.
Are they so, can these bonobos live in other parts of the world?
Well,
they live in the
they've
zoo.
Only ever lived in just one small area of Zaire, because they're kind of trapped by the distribution of rivers.
Do you think that if these bonobos, like they've been brought over here in several zoos, could survive, or would they change eventually also because their environment has changed again?
Well, yeah, that would take a long time, of course. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be wonderful to find an island, you know, some forested island of a few square miles off Florida or Georgia or somewhere.
Yeah.
And release bonobos onto it and give them a safe haven in this part of the world.
You know what? I think that's an incredible idea.
Bonobo Island.
And I think we're going to work towards that.
Well, if you could do it, people would just, and I'm sure they'd want to visit and see them.
Right, like a wildlife preserve for bonobos.
Yeah.
That's a great idea, Doctor. I love that.
We love that idea.
Well, the bonobos would love it.
Now, we have a bonobo named Babo here who wants to ask a question.
He just asked the same question, and it got a little more details, you know, as what can be done. I was just saying, is there any places that exist now where that they can be raised? I mean, are they so indigenous to the area that they're in that they can't be raised elsewhere?
Well, we're going to get that island.
Oh, yeah, there's the island, but I'm talking about right now.
Well, I mean, in Africa, the big problem for conservation is habitat. You know, the populations of people are booming, and, of course, everyone wants to have somewhere to farm for their own families, and the forests get cut down. So, no, there's nowhere in Africa that you can find that you can
make
a bonobo haven.
So what you're saying, Doctor, if we could find an island off the coast of Florida, we could put bonobos there.
Well, in theory, absolutely.
Okay, all right.
And the question is, can you persuade some of the zoos that already have bonobos here to release some to make the population?
Well, maybe we should go to Zaire with an army force and kidnap some of them and put them on the island.
Yeah, that might be a little
just like Perot.
That's a little tough, though.
Well, all things are possible. That's very inspiring.
You'd have to take an army of women.
And when did
that's right.
And let me ask you a question, Doctor. When did you fall in love with these primates?
Well, I've been working with them for 26 years.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wonderful.
Amazing.
And, you know, we've been talking about bonobos because they are wonderful. But, you know, I mean, I've worked with chimps and they're wonderful, too.
Yeah.
They're just like humans. They just occasionally get out of control. But for most of their lives, you know, they're just so touching and full of sympathy and empathy towards each other and do such lovely things. What is amazing about working with these animals is that you see such human-like behavior, and you see a connection directly from humans to the rest of the animal world.
And to the rest of the world in general, right?
Yeah. Well, you've changed my ideas about Harvard.
Whoa!
I think you're all very cool up there.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
You've made peace between Harvard and Yale. Now, I got to ask you one more little personal question here. I hope you don't mind this one. I'm sure that most of the time that you observed the bonobos, you were quite the dispassionate scientist, Dr. Wrangham, but, and you can plead the fifth on this question, but I'd love it if you could answer it. Did you ever find their sex play kind of, like, erotic? I certainly do.
Yeah, you know, I was with the bonobos, especially short time, but I was never really alone with them.
Well, I don't mean that you joined in with them.
I do know someone who took it a little bit further than that. But
really?
Oh, my goodness.
The bonobos showed no interest.
Really? Let me ask you something.
When Max is going to be disappointed.
No. When you're in the wild, did you go like in the middle of them, or were you observing them from far away, or and did they know you were there?
Yeah, but when you're with these apes, the only way you can work with them is if you're sufficiently lucky to be able to find a population where they just don't mind people.
Uh-huh.
And so
It takes years for this to happen. I mean, the chimps that I work with in Uganda, it took us 4 years to be able to get to be close to them.
Wow.
But now, we're just walking with them. So it's like being in a room with them. And you're
really?
Sitting right there, and they're in your face.
Oh.
So to speak.
Exactly.
And the bonobos never showed any violence towards you, or
they throw stuff at you? Were brought to this state by a team of Japanese observers. Now anybody can walk in there, like myself, and they show no worries at all.
Wow.
Mm. So if they walk along in the forest, you walk along just a couple of yards, a few yards behind them.
Wow.
And when they sit, you sit in the forest clearing with them.
Wow.
Incredible. That's
great. You're like a sort of ghost, you know, they just pay no attention to you.
And they say, who are these people? What do they want? They're from NBC or something.
Well, most of us can't go to Zaire this year, but you can see the bonobos at the San Diego Zoo. There's quite a few of them. And
yeah, the San Diego Zoo has the most important group in the world, really.
Yeah, they're great. And there's a glass partition between us and them, but still, you get to see them in all their glory. And they certainly, you know, when I first went down there, I thought, gosh, I wonder if they'll be having any sex, you know. I mean, maybe they do it in the morning or the evening or the afternoon. Well, of course, they do it all the time. So they were doing it. It's really fun to watch the people watch them, too.
Being shocked.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know, when National Geographic first had photographs of chimpanzees, I believe they used to airbrush the genitals off the photographs.
Oh, God, I thought they only did that in early issues of Playboy. Oh, gosh. Well, Dr. Richard Wrangham, you have been just tremendous. I mean, we are bonobo buffs here, and you are all your information and your experience has just been quite an inspiration.
And not only that, we're going to get them an island.
Yes.
I think it's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, no,
if you can help do that, it would be wonderful.
Great idea, Doc, and we're going to help, and we're going to do everything possible, and we have some good connections. So
fantastic. Well, what a great group you all are.
We're nice. We're from Yale. Actually, I'm not from Yale.
I had some of my best sex at Yale. So we're going to send you a copy of my book, The Ten Commandments of Pleasure.
Fantastic.
And everybody's got to get Demonic Males. Boy, that's almost satanic, that title.
And we have to save these wonderful creatures.
And we have to save the bonobos. So get educated and get involved. And if you'd like to give us a call, our number is
1-866-289-7068. If you're in North America, 213-749-1330. Anywhere in the world.
Thank you, Dr. Richard Wrangham. Thank you, Dr. Jim. Thank you all. I love you.
Terrific.
You are tuned to Radio Sex with me, Dr. Susan Block, your love doctor who loves you. And I'm here in my big brass bed with my snake Eve. We're all cuddled up together. And I hope you're cuddled up in your bed, too, with the lights down low to a nice romantic glow. Maybe you're in a little silk nightie or a t-shirt and boxers with cute little cartoon crocodiles all over them. Or maybe you're wearing nothing but a big smile on your gorgeous face. Maybe you're driving out there in the big wacky world. Maybe you're in a squad car. Maybe you're in a stolen car. And maybe you're all worked up about God knows what, but listen to me, baby. Look before you shoot. Then don't shoot. I don't care what you're all upset about. Don't hurt anybody. And that includes yourself. If you need to let off some steam, I understand we all need to let off some steam every once in a while, so why don't you just masturbate or something? Play with your snake. Or just give me a call from your bedside or the roadside and let off some of that steam of yours with me. I can handle it.
My number is 1-866-289-7068.
If you've ever listened or watched and gotten any pleasure from me, listen to me now. And don't cause any pain. Remember, darling, the only lethal weapon I want you handling is the one between your legs.